Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to those of you who are capable and many of you who have come to the realization that all of the world's religious, political, governmental, economic, military, media institutions are corrupt and counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, toll free 877-300-7645. This is a very difficult day for me. You know, I don't think I have as big a problem with Christmas and Easter as I do with Veterans Day. And it's because it is such a hopeless, helpless feeling. Because you're surrounded by people from every walk of life, every possible angle, all with the same exact attitude. They're literally worshiping the military. They're praising the military. They're giving thanks to the military. They're acknowledging that the military is responsible for their freedoms. They're talking about the military as it's this tremendous honor that we should be so appreciative of, and that those who served in the military are heroes. And it's just so thick, and it's so ubiquitous. And it doesn't matter if it is a liberal or a conservative. It's all the same. And as they break their own wrist, patting the military on the back for providing all of these wonderful outcomes that they are so grateful, there isn't one of them who is up to the realization that the military of the United States has been deployed in every possible lie, every possible deception, has consistently made bad situations worse, is wholly and completely counterproductive, perhaps the most deadly force on the planet. One of these programs talked about taking the oath, and how we owe so much to those who took the oath for military service. And yet, what did Yahweh say in the sixth proverb about taking an oath? What did even Yahusha, when he was talking in the first century CE, what did he say about oaths? And yet these hypocrites, calling themselves Christians, not only take the oath of military service, they go off and do exactly what he said you ought not do. There was a email, a good friend of mine sent me a email, said this is what's circulating today. What is a veteran? A veteran, whether active duty, discharged or retired, or reserve, is someone who at one point in his life wrote a blank check made payable to the United States of America for an amount up to and including his life.
That's weird. They must be very altruistic if they're just doing that for free.
This honor. This is honor. This is... And there are way too few people in this country today who understand that fact. Yeah, I tell you what. If you've given an oath of your life to your country, you're going to die along with it. You do not know God. God does not know you. He would view you as repulsive if he knew who you were. It is disgusting that you would sign an oath of your life to an institution as corrupt as the United States government. You know, there was a program on the Golf Channel. I had to working out this morning for an hour and a half, and I usually like to be distracted by sports. And I couldn't even watch sports today because it was so goddamn patriotic. It was just, I mean, I wanted to vomit. And the Golf Channel had this Vietnam vet. And they wanted to, because he won one PGA tournament, and so they wanted to have him on and honor him for his service and talk about him as being this hero. And this guy had his pictures of Vietnam, and he says, you know, the year that of active duty in Vietnam, what happened to me is that I would be routinely dropped off along with other soldiers in some place in the jungle, and then we'd have to fight for our lives. They weren't fighting for the Vietnamese. They weren't fighting for America. They were fighting for their own life. The U.S. government knowingly, purposely, deliberately drop them off in a helicopter in the middle of the jungle for them to fight for their lives. And once they lost half of their troop or battalion or whatever group, however number of individuals were there, sacrificing their lives, defending their own lives, they'd just be pulled out in whatever territory they may have maintained as a perimeter was given back. And yet they did not have the wherewithal, even now looking back at it, to say what kind of a government, what kind of a military would do that. And then it ended with this veteran fighting for his life. He's got leukemia that he contracted because of Agent Orange. And he said, you know, the government told us that Agent Orange is just fine. It's totally safe. You don't need to worry about it. It's instantly killing everything it touches. But you don't need to worry about it. They lied to him. And yet he's not able to put two and two together, that his government lied to him, and his government had so low a disregard for his life that he just dumped him into places that he would have to fight for his life only to pull them out after they had done so, for no purpose whatsoever. When are Americans going to wake up? I think the answer is never. But let me just go through a list of things that should have gotten your attention along the way. First of those, WikiLeaks. You remember WikiLeaks? On this program, I said WikiLeaks is the last and greatest gift Americans will ever be given. What WikiLeaks did is prove that everything that I had said about the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq were true. That we invaded on lies. That we had lied about everything that had occurred. That the military and the President of the United States lied on every possible occasion to create a false perception so that Americans would rally around a counterproductive invasion. And it proved that the U.S. government knew they were lying at the time they were making those statements. What would it take, America, for you to finally wake up and oppose this government and stop pretending that your military is doing you a service? Remember when we learned that the NSA was spying on all Americans? That it was monitoring every telephone call? That it was monitoring every internet click? That it was monitoring every social media site? That it had a software on every hard file, every computer, everywhere in the world? That it forced the computer manufacturers to put on their PCs that allows them to spy on any computer at any time, anywhere in the world? And with this information, absolutely quantified in the government's own documents, America yawned, didn't give a crap. Just yawned. And it was immediately after James Clapper lied, perjured himself in front of the U.S. Congress, saying, no, we have no mass surveillance capability. Within a week, WikiLeaks proved that everything he said was a lie. But we didn't ask for his resignation. He was not indicted. What's it going to take, America? When you learned, America, that the FBI had fabricated evidence on tens of thousands of cases and people had been sentenced to prison terms of a decade or more, many had been killed because the FBI deliberately and knowingly fabricated information, and that this whole thing on fiber and hair analysis was a complete and utter fraud. And they knew it at the time. What's it going to take, America, for you to finally reject this duplicitous, hypocritical, and immoral government? Now that it is known that the police are not only killing innocent civilians, but that they're covering up their crimes, You know, even in the most recent one where a little boy, I think his age was like 6 years old, was killed. And the cop said, oh, I had to kill him because his father had a gun. He was shooting at me. No, the father had his hands up in the air. He had no gun. Cop lied about the whole scenario. Ongoing, every day. It's happened thousands of times in this country that innocent people have been killed by a belligerent, overly armed, overly aggressive police force. And it's just now coming to light, and no one seems to care. When you learned, America, that your CIA was torturing people, that it had stooped to the absolute lowest level of human degradation, and that it not only was torturing people around the world, but that the authorization for torture was given at the White House, the President of the United States, George Bush, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, and let's not forget Condoleezza Rice, all knowingly, deliberately approving nationalized torture. And when you found out, you didn't seek to indict George Bush, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, and Condoleezza Rice. You put the goddamn Condoleezza Rice on your NCAA football committee. You have George Bush showing up on the Golf Channel today saying how he's focused on the bringing attention to the very veterans that he is responsible for killing. Yeah. Probably 200,000 that have taken their lives because of the stupidity of his wars. All based on lies. Yet we didn't indict him. He wasn't tried in a criminal court. What's it going to take, America? What are you going to have to hear before you finally wake up and get a backbone? Do you have any moral fabric left in your life where you can actually evaluate the evidence and make a moral decision? Or are you simply going to believe? Are you going to worship your military? Are you going to express your love for your country and die along with it? When the U.S. War College produced a research paper that demonstrated that deception is rife within all branches of the U.S. military and at all ranks, from enlisted to officers, and that deception was actually more prevalent than was an attempt to portray the truth. When you learned that you had given trillions of dollars worth of toys of mass destruction to people who would prefer to tell a lie than the truth, whose go-to choice is deception, why didn't that get your attention? Why didn't you say, you know, we ought not be trusting these people? When you learned that the U.S. military was a culture of perversion, that a woman was 8 times more likely to be sexually harassed in the U.S. military than any place else in the American culture, in the American society, when you learned that your military was creating an environment where men were vastly more likely to be sexually abused, sodomized by other men. And then when you learn that only 1% of the perpetrators is actually punished in some way in the U.S. military, and that the victims of sexual perversion get away with it. Excuse me, the victims are harassed by their own superiors while the perpetrators get away with it. And you have absolute proof of this. And you don't care. What's it going to take? We have Paul calling in from New Jersey about the military. I want to just throw one other thing in. When you learned that 22 people a day in just 40% of the states, with just 70% of the reports being made available in those states, were taking their life, that were veterans, because death was better than living. And that the number is 80 a day, and it means that over the last decade or so, it totals over 200,000 people who have tried to live the lie, being sent to fight wars that were grotesquely immoral and counterproductive, ultimately taking their own life as a result, and you don't even care. Have you lost your conscience, America? Excuse me for going on, Paul, but that's it's a sad day for me this day.
Well, when people fight in unjust wars, it psychologically gnaws at them.
Correct.
You know,
destroys their character.
Yeah, it does. And that's what's so tragic about these young men who are misguided.
Correct.
And I generally, as always, in these instances, I blame their parents. Mm-hmm. These are young men coming straight out of their parents' houses.
I agree with you.
Looking for careers. And,
right.
and that's another
right.
element of this, too, is the lack of decent paying post-high school graduate jobs
yeah.
for typical
yeah, but
young
let
men.
Let me tell you two things. One is parents are responsible. They misguide their children because they're hand over the heart, flag waving nincompoops. They believe the same lie. They've turned the military into a national object of worship. So they're responsible. But beyond that, the military doesn't seek the best and brightest. The military seeks those that don't seem to have any purpose, no hope. And it gives a false perception of hope to those who have none.
True. And also, but there's another some other elements. There's the element of political and social posing. Don't forget, mm-hmm. if you join the military, you serve 3 years, but then after that, you get to brag and pose and show off how you're a better patriot
right.
than the taxpayer
yeah.
who, through their labor and taxes, funds these,
right.
basically, and I'm going to say something that's offensive, but ready. The phrase I have is called welfare recipients in army boots.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, and this, yeah. I'm being honest about this, I have more respect for young people coming straight out of high school who flip burgers at a hamburger joint.
I do, too.
Who don't join the military and are just living a low-wage lifestyle and a somewhat menial job trying to move up the ranks and
yes.
improve their economic situation.
I do, too.
But at least they are not a burden to the taxpayers. You know, it's funny.
Right.
They join the military and you'll see them in their jets flying over the stadiums.
Ew.
And I always think, I'm paying for that.
Well, you know,
I'm losing my freedom
you are,
through taxes and my money being redistributed so these military people can play
hey,
around
off.
With their heavy weapons and
right,
get
off.
The gun range. And another point I'd like to make,
wait, you know that there are 200 sports teams in America that were paid by the Department of Defense last night to feign patriotism?
Oh,
those
yes.
displays of patriotism that you see all over the NFL and all over baseball stadiums, the
yes.
teams are paid to put on that perception of patriotism. Hundreds of
yes.
millions of dollars are squandered in this way.
And by the way, I question also their actual, the depth of their patriotism in this sense, sir.
Well, by the way, I don't care because being patriotic is a bad thing. So
well, actually,
if they're hypocrites as patriots,
right,
that's just fine with me.
Right, right. But my point is,
yeah.
if you notice, if people are eager to join the military nowadays when we have such a technological edge, and
yes.
the kill ratio might be 100 to 1. Or 50
right.
to 1, where for every 50 of those we kill, one of our guys might die in battle.
Although
and I wonder...
Although it's 10 times worse than that in terms of those that come back in pieces.
Right, right, and the suicides. But nonetheless...
Yes, oh, that's true.
If,
yeah, the suicides is probably 1 to 1.
If the kill ratio is 1 to 1 up front, I don't think so many of these boys would
no.
be joining the military. Many of them
no.
know the weapons we have are incredibly technologically advanced. We have the best bombers, fighters, tanks, everything.
Sure.
I mean, and it is true on the battlefield when we fight some of these old Soviet type weaponry as in Iraq. I mean, it's really just a slaughterhouse.
Yeah, it is a slaughterhouse.
Right,
yeah,
and they know that.
Yeah,
and,
and most of the people you're killing are innocent lives because the American military, it's been a very long time since the American military fought another military.
Exactly, like somebody of the quality of the Russians, exactly.
Yeah, we don't fight other militaries. We're kind of like the Muslims in a way. The Muslim jihadists always attack defenseless civilians. That's primarily what we do. I mean, we did not fight a military in either the of our invasions of Iraq or Afghanistan, or in Libya, or now in Syria. We're not fighting a military.
Oh, and by the way, and when we wreck these nations, or if it becomes uncomfortable, what does America do, sir? We run away with our tail behind our back.
Yeah, we do.
You know, and then we, you know.
What did we do? After we broke Libya, what did we do?
We
didn't want to talk about it anymore.
Well, and that's true. And Hillary Clinton sent those jihadists over to ruin Syria. Right.
But we provided them the arms that were the first arms brought into to Syria. But as it turns out, you know, here the United States government has documents that have been released that prove absolutely and unequivocally that long before the so-called Arab Spring, the U.S. CIA, with the presidential approval, had decided that they would go after Assad by starting a civil war in Syria.
Oh, yeah, and our military men will train these jihadis, and CIA's train these jihadis in Jordan. We train the Ukrainian neo-Nazis, right, to fight against the Russians. So American military hides behind the skirts of neo-Nazis and Islamic jihadi radicals. And the point is, and if you ever read Sun Tzu's The Art of War.
We're using both as proxies. We've become is in Syria, we're searching for all manner of proxies, and all of the proxies, just like they were in first Afghanistan with Zygmunt Brzezinski and Jimmy Carter, all of the proxies are scumbags.
Exactly. And we think nothing of it. And we just and it's quite, you know, a historic, typical thing of these elite military guys who have their money in the defense contractors. And they take these young suckers, whether they're either American or British Islamic nowadays. And we pat them on the back and we point them to the front while these rich, fat cats, and militarists make the money and have their stock pay off.
When we return, Paulette, I'd love you to stay through the break. Let's talk about the Shin Tzu's Art of War. Let's talk about Machiavelli's The Prince, and talk about the techniques and strategy that are being deployed by the United States in light of those documents, and why those constitutions aren't the ones we ought to be following. We're on the line with Paul's called in from New Jersey, echoing the concerns that I've shared over the U.S. military and how it's been deployed over the past, really, decades. But, Paul, you were saying that there's something in Shin Tzu's The Art of War that you thought was would provide some insights into all of this?
Well, yeah, they have a phrase called the Mandate of Heaven. Mm-hmm. And I think that has to do with basically the moral justification for waging a war. And you know, you brought up the Machiavelli's The Prince before. When you compare the two books, I would say that Machiavelli is absolutely amoral, and it's tragic that so many politicians and aspiring politicians who want political power, they would subscribe to such an amoral book and think that you have to be amoral to gain power, and that's not necessarily the case.
You know, I'm going to challenge you on this. I think that Shin Tzu's The Art of War is amoral. I think Shin Tzu is his strategy is often right, although his the idea of the friend of the enemy of my enemy is my friend is absolutely wrong. It's destined to destroy anyone who deploys that tactic. If the United States has deployed that tactic countless times and always failed with it. But the Shin Tzu is strictly talking about military strategy, the difference is that Machiavelli is a scumbag. Machiavelli's principal purpose in writing the book was to tell Italian aristocrats how to seize control of the religious establishment in the Vatican, the Roman Catholic Church, and then how to wield unquestioned power within that church, which was primarily to impose a reign of terror. And so he says, you know, that terror, there's some people that don't like terror, but if you use terror, if you do things that are so horrific, people will be afraid of you and they'll obey you. I mean, that's not amoral, that's immoral.
And And there are a few stories like that in Sun Tzu. But there's one thing about Sun Tzu. It's just, in a sense, the teachings I see, some of them,
okay,
as morally superior. And one particularly is that you don't have to constantly use war to get to achieve your strategic goals. That's one of the more ethical,
yes,
things they teach.
Yeah, that's true.
That basically,
that's
you can,
true,
use, yeah, economics to,
right,
conquer. And they also teach that the ultimate form of conquest is where you don't murder anybody and you basically get them to submit their will without, mm-hmm, anyone being injured. And they teach that. And that is what I want at least the politicians,
yeah,
to,
yeah,
inspire.
And by the way, I don't even, well, that is superior to terrorizing them, which is what we do in war, to killing them, which is what we do in war.
Exactly.
Well, that is superior to those two.
Yeah.
Getting someone to submit to your will is not a good idea.
Well, by definition, though, now, this is John Kenneth Galbraith in his book Anatomy of Power. He said that's exactly what power is, though. Power is,
right,
the,
correct,
getting people to submit their will to you.
Right.
Right. And you're right, though, but why is that?
That is a bad thing. We ought not be trying to get people to submit to our will. So while you have correctly stated,
yeah,
that using means other than terror and killing is superior in getting people to acquiesce to your power, to your will, we ought not be trying to get people to acquiesce to our will. You know, there was a comment at a time in the Republican debate where the Libertarian was being challenged by the Republican senator from Florida. And the Libertarian was saying that, you know, the budget of Rubio was incredibly asinine, that he wanted to spend $1 trillion more on the military. And the defense, which drew applause in that idiotic audience,
yeah,
was that, you know, well, you are a fundamentalist isolationist.
Right.
He's making an economic argument. And the response was, you're an isolationist. Well, you know, ought we all not be isolationists?
Well, that would be the ultimately how you bring peace on Earth is by minding your own business and,
correct,
staying within your territory.
Right. Be an isolationist. If you want peace on Earth, be an isolationist. Everyone should be an isolationist.
Yeah, and also not to think imposing your will on others is any kind of solution at all. And in my opinion, who would want followers? That's the way I see it, right? Right, and that's the kind of being, like, yeah, what you used to say, being contrary to political power. I don't want any
maniacal men. You know, if you are insecure, you need people to tell you you are wonderful. And if you're
right,
insecure and you know you're evil, you know you're a fraud, then you are not going to acquiesce to them telling you you're wonderful because you're not going to believe them.
But you'll force them to be wonderful.
Right. Yeah. So who are the, I mean, that's what was the case with Paul,
yes,
in his founding of Christianity. It's the case with Muhammad in his founding of Islam. It's the case in the founding of Rabbi Akiba, in the founding of Judaism. All of these men were scumbags. They were all extraordinarily egotistical and maniacal, and they wanted power through followers, and they didn't trust anybody. They knew they weren't trustworthy. They didn't trust anybody, so they essentially terrorized people into acquiescing to their authority.
Well, one of the things I like about Judaism, probably one of the few things, is that the they don't come to my door trying to proselytize me, and I like that. But, you know, Islam will do it at a sword, and Christians just psychologically, like, give you the business and hector you.
Yeah, I mean, Islam, it's really simple. If you are a Christian or a Jew, the people of the book, you have a choice. You can either convert to Islam, you can pay the jizya tax, which means you forfeit your wealth to them, and you live under the Dhimmi laws, which means that you have fewer rights than a domesticated animal. Or they kill you. And if you are a atheist or a polytheist, then your choices are you can convert to Islam or they kill you.
Exactly.
I mean,
but the problem too is that, uh-huh, that's the problem with the Christian right taking power in the United States, because then they want to use American foreign power to proselytize the world towards Christianity, and I really don't want to get involved in that. Like, hey,
no, of course not.
Well,
Donald Trump saying, if I'm president, we're all going to be saying Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
And you know, no. No. I mean, that's right. Absolutely wrong. You know, the guy that promoted that because of the Starbucks cup,
yeah.
His name is Joshua, and nincompoop Stein, it is Stein. I don't know what the first part is, but we'll use nincompoop Stein. He said Starbucks is doing it because they hate Jesus, and that's why they took the Christmas tree off the cup. Now, of course, the Christmas tree is something that Yahweh in Jeremiah says that is the most moronic, ridiculous, pagan thing you could possibly do is have a Christmas tree.
Yeah, that was in Jeremiah chapter 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, could I make a comment concerning this? As I heard it yesterday. Right.
Yeah.
Well, because this is my view on this. You might like it. It's kind of worth diverting from the topic. But you see, I have ancestry going to Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm a descendant from those pagans. Right.
Okay.
Now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. We all are. I mean, I'm a descendant from the native peoples of this country. I'm so Indian.
Oh, okay. So my the thing about it is now don't forget Sweden is way high up in latitude on
yes.
the Earth.
Yeah, I've been there a lot of times.
The winters are grim and dark.
Yeah, I've only been there in the summer, but I've been there many times.
Right. So the point is, I think just the practice of bringing a tree in, as described in Jeremiah very well, by the way, how they mm-hmm. nail it to a board so it doesn't totter.
Right.
They hang silver and gold to it. In a sense, it's a you know, these are in the days before television, mm-hmm. before radio, before right. books, for that matter. And basically, mm-hmm. imagine it. You're living in Sweden and you're sitting in a dark hovel mm-hmm. with maybe some candles, if you're lucky, are burning whale oil or seal oil, mm-hmm. and you're in the dark. So this is just the psychological mechanism to make busy work so you have something to do to while away those horrible hours in the cold.
I mean, the thought behind it was that it's an evergreen tree. You're at the worst part of the winter where the days are the shortest as you approach it, and this is the turning point where the days gradually start to grow longer, and you bring in something that is evergreen as a symbol that Mother Earth will sprout again, and then this pagan tradition celebrating the death and the birth of the sun was incorporated into Christianity.
Right, but and that's the thing.
It became an object of worship in Christianity.
Right, but in a sense. But in my opinion, I'm just being compassionate to these poor people, from thousands of years ago, who had this horrible standard of living, and this is what they had to do as a psychological mechanism to deal with polar syndrome and cabin fever.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah.
And that's my view on this. It's just like, in a sense, I'm just being compassionate towards these ignorant poor people who didn't know any, and they were illiterate at the time.
There is. You have two approaches to look at the world. One is you feel sorry for the victims. When I wrote Prophet of Doom, I wrote Prophet of Doom to the victims of Islam, which are Muslims.
Uh-huh.
And Muslims are far more victimized by Islam than anyone else. And I wrote them hoping that the truth would set them free.
Uh-huh.
And so you can look at the world that way. I did when I wrote Prophet of Doom, that it was written to liberate Muslims from the most horrible disease ever conceived by man.
Yeah.
But the other way to look at it is the Proverbs 6 way of looking at it. That's the other way of looking at it. And to say that those who acquiesce to these human schemes actually not only destroy their own freedom, destroy their own character, but by going along with the crowd and offering their oath and support to these institutions, they in turn cause others to lose their freedom. And so God doesn't look at them as being innocent victims. Now, he's treating them differently than the perpetrators. There's no punishment for the victims. But the fact of the matter is, he looks at them and says, you know, you're a co-conspirator because you just went along. And by going along, you strengthened the hold of, the credibility of the lie.
But you see, that's part of the problem I have with some of these issues. It's when you know, like one of the great things about Christianity, I would argue, mm-hmm. in comparison with Judaism or Islam, is Christianity allows people to paint a picture of someone's faith and to build statues of people, right? And now some people might call that as idol worship.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but I don't see this idol worship. I think it's beautification. I love to see statues.
Yeah,
except in
Christianity, the primary depictions are of the baby Jesus who is hopeless in his mommy's arms, Yeah. Or the Jesus that is hopeless because and helpless because he's nailed to a death stake. And those are the two primary depictions.
True.
And so, and then they want to turn others that are part of their religion into saints. And you know, God says God says don't do that. Now I don't think God's got any issue with art that is for art's sake.
But
if your art is for religious veneration, is to create a religious environment, the whole purpose of the second instruction that God cast in stone was don't do that. Don't be religious. Don't go to a religious setting. Don't do religious imagery of any kind.
So, I think there are some,
if you were to compare religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, and socialist secular humanism, they all have things that are better than the others, and things that are worse than the others. It's like saying, I've got lung cancer, I've got leukemia, I've got brain cancer. Which one would you prefer?
Right. None of the above, really.
I've got four types of plague here. Would you prefer AIDS or Ebola? That's an advantage of Christianity over Islam.
Well, there's something aesthetic. I mean, when you walk around in the European capitals and just see the art and architecture, I mean, they are beautiful, and it is it came out of Christian culture.
And there are aspects of architecture. Like, for example, I'm a student of architecture, and I love particularly the Greek architecture as interpreted by Palladio. One of my favorites. But the Roman interpretation of Greek architecture has become the means that the most despicable nation in all of human history is used today to model other nations after Imperial Rome.
Yeah.
And we use that same architecture in our religious buildings and our political shrines. So, it is actually attractive. It's also by the fact it is attractive and grandiose and grand, it causes people to view these things as credible.
Yeah, and there's a history behind it too. That kind of is the baggage that your learned background can't shake in a way. You know that, so that may keep you from enjoying it more. Knowing
it does. It does. When I travel, and I've been in somewhere between 160, 70, and 200 countries around the world, I can't walk into a religious building and just being in sight of one, it gives me the creeps. I don't care how magnificent the architecture may have been. I know what it represents.
Yeah.
And so it makes me sick. It's like walking next to somebody or going into a restaurant and sitting down at a table next to somebody that's playing religious dress up as a Muslim or somebody that's in uniform, a U.S. Soldier.
Yeah.
I mean, either one, it just makes me ill because I know what the institutions that they are representing stand for. And they're acquiescing and giving credibility to having submitted to those institutions. And I know what they stand for, so know it.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. For example, I'm a pilot. As a pilot, I'm interested in airplanes. And I used to take my son to aviation museums. But aviation museums are about 80% military hardware.
Yeah, true.
And when I know what they were used for, it makes me sick.
Right. Yeah, that's the problem. It's like a gun could be used for hunting deer and providing food, or it could be used for killing people. So,
I don't have personally an issue with guns. I probably own 15 or 20 guns. I'm not a hunter, because I don't like the taste of venison, for example. So, I don't hunt, deer because I just don't like the taste of it. I use it to plunk tin cans off logs. It's old fruit, exploding old fruit is fun. Now, the gun is, I look at as a tool.
Yeah.
The Apache helicopter is not a tool.
Yeah. Oh, true.
And it's to kill people en masse indiscriminately. The B-1B bomber is not an implement for good. You know, a U.S. aircraft carrier has one purpose. That's to protect American deadly force. You know, you look at the military ads when the U.S. Navy runs an ad, and virtually every image they show is somebody armed and deploying a weapon.
And, yeah.
You know, these are not these weapons are designed for one purpose, and that's to kill other people.
And to be, you know, used for imperialism and
yes.
non-isolation.
Yeah, non-isolation. Is the American empire is one imposed by the military for the purpose of economics.
Right, exactly. Right. All right, on that note, sir, I thank you for tolerating.
Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate your contributions. You're a well-read and bright individual.
Thank you. Have a good day, sir.
Thank you. You know, it really just all gets down, folks, to the bottom line here, and it's the purpose of the proverb. Are you going to continue to offer pledges, oaths, to human institutions, to, you know, it's a statement of belief, an oath of office, a pledge of allegiance? Are you going to continue to do that to on behalf of institutions that are wholly and completely adversarial to Yahweh and his message? How much information do you have before you recognize that all Americans have been played for fools? And it's not just America. It's the same thing in Australia and New Zealand and in Canada and throughout Europe. The citizens are being played for fools. Now, how long are you going to go along with this nationalism, with being religious, before you recognize, no, you've been lied to? Or let's just say that you're an agnostic, and to say that you don't have nationalistic fervor, that you were one of these people conditioned by socialist secular humanism somehow in academia. Well, when are you going to recognize they all lied to you? They dumbed you down deliberately so you wouldn't think. They made you so that it would be easy to condition you, to acquiesce, to give up your freedom, to give up your ability to exercise good judgment, so you would believe them even when they're lying to you, which is most of the time. You know, they're going to lie to you, for example, and say that the Arctic ice pack is melting, there's no home for the polar bears, and if you continue to drive your SUV, all the polar bears are going to die, they're going to die, they're going to drown. When, in fact, the polar ice caps are increasing dramatically. They're going to tell you that man is responsible for warming the earth. Well, that's factually untrue. And they're going to tell you that not because they believe it, but because they want to control you. They can control your behavior. They can take your money. They can play Robin Hood and redistribute it to those who will become ever more dependent upon them, giving them ever more power. You know, if you acquiesce your independence to someone because you're taking their food stamps, you're taking their housing allowance, you're getting a reverse income tax credit, you're taking their retirement, you're accepting their health care, pretty soon you are dependent. And when you are dependent, they control you. You're not controlling them. You've acquiesced your freedom. You know, it's the debate the other night, and they were talking about, you know, what would prevail. If we spend more on our military, we advance death and destruction around the world. We not only bankrupt ourselves economically, but we perpetrate all manner of horror on the world. And we end up losing our freedom. But if we promote government giveaways, entitlements, all manner of government programs to artificially hire people in jobs that, you know, 25 to 30% of the GDP right now is government in America. A form of welfare. If we continue to do that and overpay people while they're under contributing, then we not only destroy character, people's backbone, but ultimately bankrupt the country, and in the process, you lose your freedom. You lose your independence because you may hate your job, but you're now dependent upon them. And that's really where we are. You've got those that want to destroy the country through investing more in the military, and you want to those who destroy the country by investing more in entitlement programs. All the while, all the information about every institution in America, its religious institutions, its political institutions, its economic institutions, its media institutions, are all showing the same flaws. Total disregard for the truth. Acting in a counterproductive way. All while Americans yawn.